Cosmic Shed.
You're listening to The Cosmic Shed, a show that explores the way science and storytelling collide.
We'll be talking about films, books, music, theatre, TV, and anything else that catches our curiosity. From rigorously accurate science fact to ridiculously speculative science fiction.
We don't want to nitpick, but to celebrate the ways science and art can complement and enrich each other.
Mostly, we just want to talk about nerdy things that make us happy.
We've decided to do all of this from a crumbling garden shed somewhere in suburban Bristol.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.
Hello and welcome to The Cosmic Shed. I'm Andrew and it's just me in the shed today. And I just wanted to bring you this chat that I've just had with Rachel Ignatovsky. Rachel's a designer and an author. And I caught up with her because I just picked up her book, Women in Science, 50 Fearless Pioneers Who Changed the World. And it's a really wonderful book. It's a mixture of illustrations, infographics, and the stories of these wonderful people who, as the subtitle says, change the world. And it was a real pleasure to chat with Rachel. As you'll hear, she really cares about the same things that we do. Science, storytelling, science fiction, art. Rachel Ignatovsky.
I've been wanting to make a book since I was like in high school. You know, you read like graphic novels and super illustrated books. And my best friend, everyone always asks him, like, why aren't you more excited that Rachel is on the New York Times bestseller list and all this stuff? And he's like, because I watched her when she was 15 make little books when we were in high school together and all this stuff. So he's like, if she didn't make a book, I would have actually just been disappointed in her. It's really exciting.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. I mean, does it look exactly how you had it in your mind before you got it, the box?
Yeah, they did a really good job. They really trusted me and let me do really like what I wanted to do, and just I had total creative control over this project. And I worked back and forth closely with the production person to make sure the colors were right and the foil was right. So they sent me test prints and stuff before, and because I have a background in graphic design, it was a really smooth process. I when I got it in the mail, I was just like, I was stoked. I was so happy.
I bet. It's amazing, isn't it? I've made a few sort of projects before, and there's always that moment where something arrives, like if somebody's made some music because of what you've done, or an artist has created something because of what you've done, and then you've just made this whole book, so that must feel incredible. Why science? Where did that, your interest in science come? Because this is your idea, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of scientific illustration because it was what I wanted to do. And the publishing company was like, hey, have you ever thought this would be a good book? And I was like, yes, I have a proposal. It's right here. I've been waiting. But yeah, I've always been interested in science. One of my favorite classes in high school was this human anatomy class I took, and just like learning about how my own body worked, like that when I eat a sandwich, like, oh, the bread digests in my mouth and then the meat digests in my small intestine. It stuff like that just kind of blew my mind, and all of a sudden I had like a better understanding of myself and the world around me, and that just spreads like wildfire where you're like, oh, I want to learn how everything works. And I personally think that scientific literacy is one of the most important things that we can teach young and old people in this world. A lot of people feel scared to learn about complicated and dense materials. They feel like, you know, I'm not smart enough to learn about, you know, dark matter or astrophysics. I'll never understand it. But what I'm trying to do with this book for kids and adults, if I can make it fun and easy and present this information in kind of like a whimsical way, then I'm hoping that they're brave enough to pick up a book that is a little more denser than, you know, just a super illustrated book about women in science. And I also think women in science is super important just because they're just so underrepresented. So people get to learn about volcanoes and genetics and history with this book. They get to learn about like what these women had to overcome while learning about science. It's just, I'm really excited about this project, and it's just such a passion of mine.
Yeah, I can see that. But it comes across in the book. You know, it's beautifully made. It's beautifully put together. It's beautifully written, and it could only be that because you care about it.
Yep, it is. It is what I literally every waking moment went into this book. The responses I'm getting, it's like more than I could ever hope for. Like I'm getting like calls from, well, not calls, I'm getting emails. No one calls each other anymore. I'm getting emails from like moms who are like, every night I read one page with my kid, and the conversations that get started are amazing because like they start having questions not only about like the science in the book, but also about like history and like the women's movement and all of that's in the book too. So like I said before, like you get to learn about you know, genetics, but then at the same time you get to learn about the civil rights movement, because what these women had to overcome is just as impressive as what they accomplished. So just being able to start those conversations between like parents and kids, and then the parents are like, and I learned a lot too. I had no idea about any of this stuff. So like, that's like, my plan is working. They're learning. And yeah, the reason that I really wanted it to be so densely illustrated is because that's the kind of books that I liked as a kid, because I hated reading as a kid. And a lot of authors don't like to admit that, but I had exotropia, which is like a really like cool way of saying I had a lazy eye. I would get all these migraines when I read, but then I discovered like comic books, and all of a sudden everything changed.
Yeah. Which comic books were you reading?
Oh, when I was a kid, I was like reading like The Illustrated Odyssey and like these like bio books called like World Famous Artists that I thought were really cool, that like go into class. Elementary school, I would go into class and I'd be like, Picasso's Blue Period. Oh, it's so interesting. And like go to my art teacher and be like, this fairy drawing I drew, it's surreal. Like Salvador Dali. And I was just like this really like pretentious, like 8-year-old. It was really annoying. But and then like in high school, I would like, you know, read graphic novels like, you know, Mouse and Sandman and I'm trying to remember the name of it, Persepolis, I think it's called, along with just like reading, you know, whatever else I wanted to read. I liked sci-fi a lot, like The Handmaid's Tale. That was one of my favorite books in high school. And you know, just like the classics, like, you know, 1984.
Yeah, and you did some illustrations for Ray Bradbury collection, didn't you?
I basically created books. I made each of his short stories a book, and I kind of created this box set that really celebrated what Ray Bradbury was about. And I did these like really graphic, it doesn't look like anything I do now because I was in college and I was really experimenting, but I made the stories illustrated. Like there's that one where that boy's blood kind of like attacks him, turns him into like a doll or something until he's like not himself anymore. So like I made it so that like it looked like the blood was like attacking the pages in the book as you got until like the pages were red at the end with like white text.
Yeah.
So that's why college, going to design school is so great. You really get to experiment and you get to work with like amazing people. So yeah, that was I built books out of with my hands. To make those, I binded them and everything.
Is it so that isn't something we can buy then?
No, that's not something you could buy. That was a project I did in college as a part of my portfolio to be able to get a job.
Yeah. And what job did you get then from that?
Oh, I got hired right out of school by Hallmark. So I was making greeting cards, and it wasn't really what I wanted to do. So I quit. And I just started making the things that I felt passionate about, which was stuff that I could learn. I could learn things while I was making it. So I started making these dense infographics about stuff that I thought was really important. I like ecosystem and layers of the earth and these cell drawings. And the piece of artwork that really started making a name for myself was these body system posters I did, where each body system is like a character. So like we had the digestive system and the respiratory system. And what's really exciting for me about that is I got this mail that this dad was using my respiratory system illustration to explain to his daughter who had a respiratory disease why she had to use a respirator at night. She's 4, and the images of anatomical lungs was kind of scary to her.
Yeah.
And I drew like a little diaphragm that's like pushing the lungs up. All of a sudden she understood why she needed to use this piece of machinery to breathe at night, and it like helped her. And that's when I realized that what I was doing was like, oh, I need to keep doing this. This is important.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. And slightly less important, probably, but just as much fun, I imagine, is like, there's an infographic. Is it called an infographic? I don't know. of the Hunger Games, the districts of Panem.
Yeah, that was with Fandango. And they called me up and they were like, "We love what you do. Can you do it for movies?" And I'm like, "I love movies." Yeah. So, yeah, I did this. I did the districts of Panem, and I did The Hobbit too. And you could see Bilbo going through his little journey in like a map that gets him all the way to Smaug's Benedict Cumberbatch, the dragon's gold pile.
Yes.
Yeah, and I got to do the Avengers, like, and I did like the anatomy of like Tony Stark, which I thought was really fun, and Godzilla, which I really like doing because I really like those like super old ones where he's just a giant puppet.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I like. Really cool. That's all for Fandango.
Mm-hmm. Those are all freelance jobs that I did for Fandango, where they literally were like, "Do whatever you want, and we're going to use it to help promote these movies."
Is it a poster? Can you buy it? What?
I guess it's just an infographic that they used online to promote the movies, because people ask to buy it all the time, but I'm not allowed. It's theirs. It's Fandango's.
Oh, that's a shame. I mean, it's brilliant stuff. I love it. I mean, obviously, it caught my eye, and I'm like, this is really So it kind of brings us, I think, pretty much up to date with the where you started doing this book. Or were you doing this book all the time?
It really started because I complain a lot, and I was complaining to my friends who are in education that there's not enough representation of women throughout history in the normal curriculum. I'm like, you're not, like, unless it's like Women's Day, you know, we're not learning about these girls. And then also there is this census that just came out in, you know, it came out in 2013, and everyone was talking about it the year later, where like they showed the actual gender gap in STEM fields, and it's insane. It's like there's only 13% representation of women in engineering. Like 13%. That's insane. And so I was like, the reason that this is happening is because, you know, our culture, like when you close your eyes and you think of a scientist, you think of a white guy in a lab coat. And the only way to change that is to introduce young people to stories about women in science throughout history, because they exist. But then when you think about it, like, who do you think of? You only think of Marie Curie because she's the only one we include when we talk about her on, like, you know, on the BBC program or the PBS special or even in the classroom. And so I was complaining a lot. And then, like, I really believe that if you complain a lot and then you don't do anything about it, you're just like the worst. So I was being the worst. So I started using the skill set that I had, which was illustration, to celebrate these women. And people were getting really excited about the drawings. And in the back of my head, I was like, I always wanted to do a book. I'm gonna figure out a way to make this into a book. And yeah, the stars aligned and I got to do it.
The illustration side of it is is kind of your thing. You do that.
Yes.
The writing side, is that new, or have you been writing all the time as well?
That I've been talking all the time. The writing. Writing's new, but it's one of those things that I truly believe that if you have a threshold for pain and you're gonna and you want something bad enough, you can make yourself like do it. You know what I mean? So I would sit down and I would write 1,000 words a day, whether or not I wanted to. This is something I'm going to attest to just going to design school. Man, did I learn how to be creative when I did not feel like being creative. And that skill that I have for illustration just completely bled into being able to research and write and think about the stories I want to say. The difference between illustration and writing for me is that I have, like, you know, like the million hour rule, where it's like, oh, I've got a million hours under your belt, you're good at it. Mm-hmm. I got that for illustration, but for writing, I still don't. So I have to like really baby myself. Like I have to like have all my favorite snacks out, and I have to like force myself to wake up early. And then like, I have to like take lots of breaks where like I baby myself. Like where it's like, okay, Rachel, like you wrote a really nice story. Now it's time to like watch a little TV so you could write some more. And I'm just a total baby. So I think for anyone who's starting off writing, pick something that you feel is that needs to be said, that like if that you feel really passionate about, that stories that need to be told, and just just force yourself to sit down and do it every day, whether or not you want to, until it's done, because you'll feel good when it's done.
There's 50 people in this book. There's yes. more than 50 women in science over the years. So how do you pick them?
Okay, so I could have done, this book could have literally been like women in chemistry, 50 women in chemistry. And we'd be having the same conversation where it's like, you left out a lot of women. How did you do this? How did you cut it down? So for me, I really wanted diversity, and not just diversity in the people's stories. I wanted diversity in the fields of study that they're in. So that's why we have people, we have volcanologists, we have marine biologists, we have, astronomers, we have biochemists, we got them all. But I also really wanted a breadth of history. So that's why we go all the way from Hypatia in ancient Alexandria to Miriam Mizrakhani. For people who don't know, in 2014, she was the first woman to win a Fields Medal because of her work in like hyperbolic geometry. It's like, it's insane. For me, that was one of the hardest things to just like write about, because I had to learn about this intense math and like distill it down to where an 8-year-old could also understand it. So that was a really amazing challenge. Breadth of history, and then also breadth of story. I wanted people who came from different places, different religions, different backgrounds, different economic situations. And that's why you learn so much about suffrage, the civil rights movement. And you even end up learning about like the space race and World War II. And what happens is you find out that what these women actually have in common, because they're so different, is just like this fierce passion to do their work and their love of their work, no matter what the obstacles were. So, yeah.
What was kind of the easiest? What's the just like, this person's going in?
Okay, so this person's going in, Rachel Carson. And for those who don't know, Rachel Carson was a science writer who just had a passion about writing about marine biology. And then she uncovered that DDT was poisoning the water supply and kind of just destroying the ecosystem. And so with her background in marine biology and ecology, she exposed what these pesticide companies were doing. And then she had to go into a huge lawsuit with them, because they over like about $250,000 they spent trying to defame her while she had cancer. Actually, she was battling cancer towards the end of the book. So she was showing up to court, fighting for what she thought was right while, battling cancer. And she helped create the standards and laws that, protect the environment and the people today in America by fighting for it in court. So yeah, she was one of the people where I'm like, she used her passion and her passion for science and her ability to communicate with the public about science to really change policy in America and the world, because the world followed in suit. And to, and for those who don't know, you get exposed to too much DDT, your brain just falls apart. And your liver just falls apart. That's the fun way of saying it. So you can read my book to hear the more scientific version of it.
That sounds like a film in its own right. But Katherine Johnson is the film Hidden Figures is coming out in the UK very soon. It's already out in America.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
I just saw it. It's so good.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh my God, it's so good. And like all these girls in the audience, they just were like cheering the whole time. It's just like, yeah, take your family, take everyone you know.
Could you tell us just a bit about her? We'll hear more because we're going to do a podcast on that on its own. But just tell us a bit about Katherine Johnson so everyone who listens to this can then go and see Hidden Figures and then listen to our episode on Hidden Figures.
Yes, spoilers, guys. Katherine Johnson is literally one of my favorite stories in the book. So she grew up in the height of segregation in America, and she started working at NASA. So not only did she have to deal with, segregation, not being able to use the bathrooms in the same building that she worked, but she also had to deal with a very segregated by gender, a very gender biased NASA. So at the time, women were kind of only given the work of being computers at NASA. And being a computer at NASA is, you know, right now I have a computer in my phone and a computer on my lap talking to you, and I use computers every day, but they didn't have computers back then. Instead, they actually had a room filled with women, and each of them would do just a part of the equation to get the larger equation solved that they would then give to, you know, the mathematicians and the engineers who got to really make the real decisions on the program. So that wasn't enough for Katherine Johnson. She wanted to know what they were working on at NASA. She knew they were trying to beat the Russians into space, and she needed more information. She needed the day-to-day information to be able to do her job effectively. So she goes to her superior and she says, "Can I be in one of these meetings?" And he goes, "Well, women aren't allowed in these meetings." And then she says, "Well, is it against the law for me to be in these meetings?" And he's like, "No." And she's like, "I'm going in." So she goes in. She starts asking questions. She calculates the launch window for the Manned Mercury project. That's a huge success. And then she becomes a leader in trajectory for the Apollo mission. So she actually planned the flight path to get our men to the moon. Amazing. She wrote the first textbook on space travel. She she was an integral part of the space shuttle program that we still use today. And she worked on the manned mission to Mars that we're still like working towards today. She worked a lot on that.
She's still alive, isn't she?
She is still alive. I think she's 98 now, I'm pretty sure. Last year when I was doing the book, actually, I'm about to send it to the printers. I'm like struggling. I'm like, "Oh, I need to get this done so we could get it to the printers." And my editor emails me and is like, "You need to look at the news right now." And at the age of 97, Katherine Johnson was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So I got to draw it real fast and get it in the book. So I was like, yay for not making deadlines. but you also have to think of it, like, she started off not being even allowed in the meetings, not even being allowed to go to the bathroom in the same building that she worked. And then after a lifetime of achievement, she's awarded the highest civilian honor you can get in America by President Obama.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, it sends like tingles down your spine.
It's fantastic.
And it's amazing. It's just such a slice of history too.
Yeah, completely. So I'm really excited about the film. I can't wait. But are there other sort of stories in here, people in the book that you think need to be made into a film?
Oh yeah, man. There's so many. You know what would be a really good one? Sao Lan Wu.
Okay, yeah.
How she discovered the Higgs boson, especially because it's like modern science. I think that would make an amazing movie, because she came from such poverty in China. Her mom was completely illiterate. Did whatever she could to get a Sao Lan Wu an education, and she wasn't going to be allowed to go to university unless she got a full ride completely. And basically, all of the entirety of the United States said no to her, except for Vassar. And so she came over on a boat with nothing but like change and like a little piece of cake, and ended up at Vassar, and just kind of just worked so hard. And then she's getting her PhD from Harvard, and she is like, she's the only woman in her graduating class, and she's told to leave the reception for the graduates because there's no women allowed in the reception.
Wow.
And she says to herself, like, "I'm going to make three great discoveries. That's my goal in life, is to make three amazing discoveries." And she does. She discovers the charm quark, which is like a subparticle it's even smaller than like neutrons and protons. It's like the quarks that like are charged to create those. And then she discovered gluon, which is what keeps all those quarks together. And then she goes on to be the lead on the team that discovers the Higgs boson, which is called the God particle.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's what gives all these subatomic particles mass. It's this huge field that they're all going in. Yeah, she doesn't even have a birth certificate because she was born during the Japanese occupation of Hong Kong. There was like bombs going off while she was being born. Through just tenacity and her hard work, she fulfilled her dreams, and just really amazing. Sao Lan Wu.
Amazing
story.
I mean, the book is kind of full of stories like this. I mean, there's if screenwriters are looking for inspiration, they just need to pick up your book, and there's plenty in there. Please, can you do some organisation with Fandango and have a book of your science fiction and fantasy illustrations?
We'll see. It's hard. You know, you don't mess with the mouse or, you know, I only do a licensed material when I'm asked to, specifically by the company that does it, because I don't dance with the mouse.
No. Fair enough.
I literally just finished Women in Sports last night, like turned in the last little bit of artwork for like a spot illustration. Super excited to talk about these women who like scaled Mount Everest and can bench press like 300 pounds, showing what women's bodies are capable of. And it's just amazing when women can prove themselves to be physically strong, all of a sudden they can prove themselves in the minds of some people also as leaders off the field in society. There's many stories of women who won gold medals at the Olympics and then went on to be like members of parliament in Italy and in Canada. I actually have a fencer and a wheelchair racer who actually did just that in the book. So it's just, what does it mean to become a social icon through strength? How are women represented in the media now versus like how they should be represented? So that's what's coming out July 2017. And then in between, actually, this journal I made is also coming out, which is I Love Science, which is coming out, I think in March. I'm really excited about this because it's front-loaded with all this like cheat sheet information. You don't really see that done really beautifully that often. So it like I put a HTML coding vocab in the front and like physics equations and like geometry equations and the periodic table and like a star chart. And I never say the book is for girls. It's just a very pretty journal. You know what I mean?
Listen, I we could talk all night.
Yes.
Thank you so much for the conversation. Thank you so much for the book. It's brilliant.
Yes. And okay, bye, Andrew.
Bye.
Thank you so much to Rachel Ignatovsky. We'll post links to all of the work we talked about on the Cosmic Shed website, thecosmicshed.com. We'll be back soon with an episode on Westworld, I think. Probably the TV series and the film. And of course, Hidden Figures. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.